this episode, we hear from Julia, who talks about her work with SEND across Southend and Essex, but also the mental health campaigns that she's involved with because of her own personal experiences.
A massive thank you to Provide, who are sponsoring Series 5 of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. They are a community interest company offering services across Essex, providing outstanding care. And if you want to find out more about them, please visit their website at www.provide.org.uk. Okay, so thanks for joining me, Julia. I just thought it would be good for you to start with telling us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've run a charity called Send the Right Message, which supports in Southend are 710 so far. SEND children and families, and there are many, many more as well, raising awareness, providing whatever support is needed. And also that led to a connection with Melanie Leahy's nine-year campaign for a statutory public inquiry into Essex Mental Health Services. I also do some activism. I am from an autistic family, and I'm highly likely to be autistic as well. I have some very strong traits, and they've served me very well throughout my life. And I've reached a point in my life where I would like to use my experience, and I would like to create spaces where our community can feel safe and can have voices. And I want to talk about equality for them and inclusion and what that really means.
Brilliant. No, thank you. And there's loads of really interesting things here that we want to kind of explore, if that's okay, Julia. So the first part really is Send the Right Message, the charity you set up. What inspired you to set that up, Julia?
Well, we were having a very difficult time. My youngest son was becoming very unwell. My eldest son was diagnosed with autism in mainstream education with an EHCP. My youngest son fell out of school. We'd had three bereavements, and I couldn't get anybody to, apart from Great Ormond Street, to accept or understand what was going on. It was a terrifying time. As a parent of a child with autism, it was a bit like going through the Salem witch trials, if you've heard of those.
Yes.
Because we consider ourselves to be in a very modern place. We have so much science, but this area seems to be one where there are great centres of learning where we know so much, but it hasn't filtered down to local understanding. So that we're in terrible, terrible difficulties as families, and things were not going well. And then I read an article in the newspaper that said that there had been a recent Ofsted inspection that hadn't gone well. And I looked at the comments beneath the article and thought, it's not just us, it's lots of people. Mm-hmm. We're not just a one-off. And that's terrible. That was the night that it began. It was February 2019. And I hate doing things like this. Mm-hmm. I just like to live my life peacefully and quietly. But something snapped. And I thought, we need to take up our space and inhabit it and make sure that we are... we're receiving basic services, not extra special, not more than anyone else, just basic. We want basic services, please. Or people will suffer. They will suffer very, very badly.
I mean, one of the words I hear a lot when I speak to parents, especially, is this battle word, having to battle for the right support, whether that's SEND support, whether that's mental health support. And you're quite right. You know, it shouldn't have to be a battle. People should know, you know, what support is available, and it's early. So it's that early intervention, and it's there. I mean, you spoke really well about how the understanding is there, you believe. Why is that understanding not filtering down then? What do you think are the biggest reasons for it not coming down to ground level?
I think it's fear. Fear that, and certainly there is discrimination there, because I wonder if it were any other kind of person, and we knew what needed to be done, we just decided not to do it. Well, that would figure in the news on a daily basis, etc. The fear, well, if I do this for this little boy, I'm going to have to do it for that one and that one and that one. And that wouldn't do. That might cost money. Well, we're talking about children. To some people, they are just figures on a balance sheet that gets printed out. It's all they are. But at grassroots ground level, they are children. Children who go to school in the morning, like my middle son did, and said, "Mum, I've got a sore tummy. Sorry, son, you're car sick." No, years later, you discover no. He feels sick. He feels anxious. He feels scared because he's autistic and he doesn't know, and I don't know, and we don't know what we're doing. So the impact of not filtering that knowledge down is vast. And as a family, I can liken it at the outset to being taking your entire family whitewater rafting, and your raft goes over and you are all thrown into the water without life jackets. And you are screaming, you're holding your hands out, you're saying, "My son's autistic, I've got the diagnosis." And your children are, you know, bobbing up and down in the water. Your granny's bobbing down, up and down in the water, swirling all around you, and you're drowning. And the people on the shore are going like that. "No, she's fibbing." And you're sort of going, "Help, help." It's that bad. You know, I smile and I laugh. It's worse than that, because if they can't understand and accept what is a very typical presentation of high-functioning autism in a child, potentially at the age of 9 or 10, if they can't accept this, then you become a fibber. Terrifying situations happen. You could be accused of Munchausen's, or maybe no. In the case of my son, your son is naughty. He won't go to school, and you're a very slack mother. And you sit there and say, "No, I've got a 26-page report from Great Ormond Street, from World Leads, so no." But actually, to them, that's all I was. So it's dehumanising, it's terrifying, and worse. The final stab in the back for us is, while all this is going on, your child is not receiving the support it needs. And you're reading reports that say, you know, little Billy needs a clip round the ear, needs to get back to school. You know, he needs to be some tough love. He needs tough love. And his mum is a wimp.
The point you've made there, Julia, which I think is absolutely key, is when these things aren't working, when the process is just taking so, so long to find support, like you said there, it's the child that's suffering. And I think that can sometimes be very easily forgotten, that it is the child that is the one that is suffering. Obviously, the parents are as well, as you've really described there, Julia. And obviously, not being a parent myself, I would never say I understand, because, you know, I'm not in your shoes. But hearing you speak there, I know there'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast who I'm sure will be able to relate, as again, as you mentioned. Could you just tell me, you spoke a little bit at the start about the inquiry. Could you explain a little bit about the inquiry for us?
Yeah, well, I grew up with an autistic brother. We know that now. My mum was a children's social worker. And after he died and my eldest son was born, she worked it out. My brother had autism. He killed himself at the age of 19 with no warning. We had no warning. Devastating. Then my son was named after him, and my son lasted 19 years. The same lifespan as my brother, only this time we knew more, we knew better. But it was very hard to be understood, impossible. Again, you're not a clinician. You're not this, you're not that. We don't want you telling us anything. And another difficulty we face is we do know, listen to us. And certainly there are lots of studies as well. So after I had been running what is now a charity for about a year, I came across Melanie Leakey, who has been fighting for 9 years for a full statutory inquiry into Essex Mental Health Services. She lost her son, Matthew, at the Linden Centre in Chelmsford. And we need to understand what is happening. Yes, it is happening predominantly to our young, but also there are people of all ages. But Melanie and I went through the people who had been lost in Essex. We went through them together. Many are diagnosed with some form of SEND. Matthew himself had. And so when our people are entering mental health services, we want to know, just as in the school system, in an ideal world, things will be differentiated to the autistic style for best outcomes. Yeah. Well, we need to see that in the mental health system too. We know that 7 out of 10 of our community will experience some form of mental illness in their lifetime. Many of these are preventable, but that raises risk. And when it comes to the risk of suicide, in 2017, the National Suicide Prevention Report made it very clear that autistic people are 9 times more likely to complete, I hate that word, a suicide. So when we are looking at the risks of discharging them or what treatments are we going to offer them, we need to factor that in. We need to offer treatment from people who are experts and can communicate and engage. The length of treatment itself as well will be different. And what certainly when it comes to drugs, and I know there's a great controversy over those at the moment in all communities, we need to understand how the autistic or SEND brain will process those drugs. Will they work? Will the side effects be too bad? We need to know that our inpatient environments are safe, that people are not discharged too soon. And also with our SEND young people, a great deal of them are at a higher risk for the abuse of alcohol and drugs. And there is a very clear reason for that. They are reaching out, trying to self-medicate. These things are at hand, and they have, many of them, lived with chronic anxiety and reach out for a drink, and it's a quick fix. So in the long term, it may well cause some problems. So lots of understanding, lots of combining good mental health therapy and diagnostics with hand in hand with substance abuse therapy and advice. Whatever works for us will work for everybody else, in terms of we're just stopping that train and saying, whoa, we have to really treasure people who are ill. We have to protect them. We have to give them a real recovery, not just lock them away for a week, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, and then spew them out. We have to create the art of recovery again. I know it exists in some places, and it is an art. And when you see it, it's a very beautiful thing. So we know that what's going on in Essex is going on everywhere, all over the UK. So we would like to just use Essex as a barometer. We would want to actually start work on really improving things, giving people their souls back. I think we've got the time to do it, the space to do it. Again, there is that fear. I'm spending money on him. What if I have to spend money on him as well? And they don't matter. Would we say this with cancer? Are we going to say, let's pretend that half of children with cancer don't have it, and let's not offer them any treatment because that will save money? There would be an outcry and people would be in jail if that happened. We've become desensitized to what's really happening, to the fact that we are losing people that we don't need to lose, or that people are suffering in long, drawn-out, barbaric ways. We can do better than that.
Absolutely.
It wouldn't take much. We don't need new ideas. All the ideas are there. We just need to do it.
I mean, Julia, I can 100% see why one of our young ambassadors, Connell, he put you forwards to speak to us today. And I can certainly see why, because you speak so, so well. And obviously you speak very passionately, and you obviously have your firsthand experience as well. And you know, you've hit so many, you know, notes here. Just, well, this is happening now. This is not, you know, something that is being made up or exaggerated. The facts you kind of have given there are, as you say, you know, very widely known. I know in September, I completed my suicide awareness or suicide prevention training, sorry, and I heard a lot of these facts here. And it comes back to, doesn't it, that if we know children or people with SEND are 9 times more likely, why are we not doing something about it? And as you said, the understanding you feel is there, but it is how we get to that next level. So, I mean, Julia, you have kind of described it in your answers already about what is needed, but I guess if you could maybe sum up, how do we get to that point then, Julia, that everybody is getting the right support they need?
Well, that's the really crazy thing. And then I'll just go back. I loved speaking to that young journalist. He will go places, and he gave me hope and he gave me energy, because it is very draining when you see suffering. It takes all the vitamins out of you, and meeting him just gave me a bit of energy. It's actually really easy. And what we've done is we've acknowledged that SEND and mental health can go hand in hand. And as you know, many of us don't experience mental illness. And that's fantastic. I took a lot of time. I trained as a lawyer in my late 20s, 20 years ago. And I loved it. It was brilliant for reading deep into corners and crevices and spending days and ages. Legal work wasn't quite so thrilling, because you have to process paper really quickly. But it taught me, and certainly I saw shenanigans going on in the city, but nothing like I've seen since I've been a SEND parent. So we have the most beautiful, exquisite laws which codify everything we need to do. Nobody could write them better. They're there. They exist. They are exquisite and perfect, but they lack teeth. So what you need within those is a clause somewhere within that law saying, and if you break this law, the penalty is a fine or whatever, you know. So firstly, there are really no penalties, hardly any penalties with any of our laws. And again, we must ask, why would you create a law with no real penalties for its breach? Yeah. Because you don't really believe in it. You don't really want this community to access their rights. And I find it tedious talking about rights, because it's a bit like standing in a queue saying, you know, I have the right to an ice cream. I have a voucher with my ticket. I don't care about that.
No.
But it really is the right to survive. I know Meghan Markle talks about thriving. Really good access to justice, so that we can take these matters to court. And you will know that there is virtually no legal aid in these matters. And presently, the government is talking about removing the right to take an issue to judicial review, which is one of the most effective ways of questioning a decision in court quickly, because anything we do, anything we take to court, needs to be quite quick for a child, because a year in the life of a child at home with no education is too long.
Yeah.
You know, so judicial review is a great remedy, and we may be about to lose it. We want to go to the very highest tables and say, right, stick a penalty in there, please. And also, if something is broken, if you're a little boy who has anxiety and autism and you're at home, you've fallen out of mainstream school, you've been off school for 3 years with nothing, no healthcare, no social care, no education. I can take that to the ombudsman. Well, you're going to get £2,000 or £3,000 in compensation. Mm. Your life chances may have gone down the toilet. £2,000 or £3,000 worth of compensation is again discriminatory, because it doesn't reflect the real impact of that breach upon you. So again, we see the devaluation of SEND people. They're not considered seriously. In what other area of law would such a low level of compensation be considered appropriate? Mm. So again, the clues are there. So we have to step forward. We're ready to have equal rights. Thanks. But one of the problems we face is many movements have managed to do well, and I celebrate that, in terms of equal rights. because they have a young, active, fit, mobilised and large community who will jump up. And I know we see this in the news. Try to get our community together to protest. It's going to be very hard. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
And must we go without equal rights because we do not have the ability to mobilise? Who speaks for us? Puzzles.
You send a really, really strong message. And I know, as I already said, that there's going to be people listening to this that will be relating to it 100%. So I guess my final question, Julia, is if there are parents, maybe professionals even as well, that really want to see if they can support in any way, what could they do that would be most kind of proactive right now, Julia? What could they do?
Come and connect with us. You have the audacity to just want to have a chat. If you can find justice for Matthew Leahy, that's L-E-A-H-Y, justice for Matthew Leahy, sign the petition. Let your MP know, write to your MP and let him know that you support Melanie's campaign.
Listeners definitely can write to their MPs and question the Melanie Leakey case and everything that was going on there, because that would be a great way to see if you can get your MP on board and really raise awareness, but also to visit the Facebook page as well, so send the right message. As I've said already more than once today, Julia, you've spoken brilliantly well, and I know that working with our young people, which is why we've set up this podcast, is that mental health is a massive kind of hot topic for them, and they really want to, as you said, not talk about it for endless hours and endless meetings. They want to go and see some action. So if you listen to this, please do follow the bits that Julia's mentioned there. And once again, I just want to thank you, Julia, for being so open and honest. And let's hope that things can change. Absolutely. A massive thank you to Provide, who are sponsoring Series 5 of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. They are a community interest company offering services across Essex, providing outstanding care. And if you want to find out more about them, please visit their website at www.provide.org.uk.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.